This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. The New York Times bestselling book, The Boys in the Boat, tells the story of nine Americans and their quest for a gold medal in rowing at the 1936 Berlin Olympics. The book just came out in paperback, and I had a chance just recently to talk with author Daniel James Brown, who was on the phone from his home in Seattle. Despite the fact that I've been rowing for more than a decade, I learned a lot in reading your book, The Boys in the Boat. What was your introduction to rowing?
Well, actually, this rowing and this story walked into my life one day about 6 years ago. My neighbor, Judy, came to me, and she'd been reading one of my earlier books to her father, who was living at her home under hospice care and was in the last couple months of his life, and he was enjoying that book, and she wondered if I'd come down and meet him. So I went down the next day, and I met this elderly gentleman named Joe Rantz, and Joe told me this extraordinary story about, first about growing up during the Depression, and he had a very poignant story to tell about his personal circumstances. But then he began to talk about coming to row at the University of Washington in the fall of 1933, and how that had begun to transform and in some ways redeem his life, and how ultimately he and his crewmates had wound up rowing at the Berlin Olympics in 1936 against a German boat in front of Hitler and the other top Nazis. And I just became mesmerized by that story right from that first day, and I set out the next morning to start working on a book about it. But I didn't really know anything about rowing at that point, and so it's been a six-year odyssey for me, coming to understand the sport and learn all about it.
Well, I mentioned my experience in rowing, and I've seen a lot of boats that had Pocock written on them, and really didn't know that much about Pocock, and that's as much of a story here in the book as the story about those nine boys in the boat.
Yeah, so George Pocock was this English-born boat builder. He learned to build shells at Eton College as an apprentice to his father, and then emigrated to Canada and wound up at the University of Washington building these beautiful cedar shells that by the mid-30s every collegiate program in the country was using. They were so beautiful and so superior to any others. But Pocock, in addition to being a very fine boat builder, it was also a very fine rower, and he was also something of a sage, a deep thinker, and an almost mystical kind of thinker. And he had a huge influence on generations, actually, of rowers at the University of Washington, both the rowers and also their coaches, and very much shaped parts of this story, because he was the sort of the benign force that brought together some of these boys and taught them how to trust one another and become this one cohesive thing that a great crew has to be.
Did you realize as you got into this how old the sport of rowing is? That was one thing I was very surprised about when you were talking about the popularity of rowing, and even early there in the 20th century where there were tens of thousands, if not 100,000 people watching some of these races.
Yeah, no, I didn't really know until I began doing the research how old it was, and how particularly I was surprised at how very popular it was particularly in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. As you say, 100,000 people would turn out on a Saturday afternoon at one of these regattas to watch a crew race, and crew races were major races were broadcast sometimes live coast to coast on radio, which was then a new medium. Prominent oarsmen would appear on the covers of Saturday Evening Post and national magazines like that. So it was a hugely popular thing during those years and a real force in American life.
You have descriptions of some of these regattas and some of these races that are just gripping, you know, a lot of suspense that's involved. What kind of research did you do, and what kind of sources did you find to put so much action and excitement into these events that you describe in your book, The Boys in the Boat?
Well, I was fortunate in that in those days, because the sport was so popular, there was an enormous amount of press coverage. So for instance, these big annual regattas in Poughkeepsie, New York, newspapermen from all over the country would come and cover these things, and so there was a huge amount of very detailed coverage in the papers. But then on top of that, the families of all nine guys in the boat helped me out here. They got very excited about the fact I was writing this book, and so they came to me with diaries and letters and personal accounts that allowed me to fill in a great deal of detail also. And so it was that kind of research, and then sitting down with, I should say, with the family members of all nine young men in the boat. I think I recorded hundreds of hours of interviews with them. So I had a great deal of source material to work with.
I'm speaking with Daniel James Brown, the author of The Boys in the Boat, Nine Americans and Their Epic Quest for Gold at the 1936 Berlin Olympics. It's available where books are sold, and you can find out more about it at our website, wvxu.org. I wanted to ask you, Daniel, you really bring in a lot about the sport of rowing and what it is to be a rower, especially a competitive rower. Where did you get those aspects of the sport? I mean, as I said, I'm a somewhat experienced rower, by no means highly competitive, but I've been learning a lot reading your book.
Well, I had the help of a great many people. Another group that got very excited about the book was the current crew staff, coaches at the University of Washington, because this is a part of their history that they're very proud of. So they gave me access to a lot of rowers and to their archives, and they taught me a great deal about the sport. And then as the project unfolded, I was able to make contact with all kinds of people from around the country, and people read drafts of the manuscript and gave me places to look for more research. And so all that came together over the course. It was about 4 years of research behind this book, so it took a while, but I was able to learn a lot during those 4 years.
Did you have a chance to actually row yourself and get a true feeling of the pain?
To sit in a shell, but not enough to really call myself rowing. What I did do is spend some time out in the coaching launch, following the freshmen around the lake. One thing I learned was how very cold and miserable it can be in January out on Lake Washington when the wind is blowing, and it gave me a pretty good feel for that part of it, at least.
Well, I have to say that in reading your descriptions of some of their training out there on Lake Washington, you were making me as a reader feel cold, too. So I could feel that chill in the bones. And it's very interesting that you bring up in the book the dichotomy between the West Coast rowing and the East Coast rowing. And I think it's one that still exists today. In the form that, you know, the East Coast rowing seems to be very elite, you know, and the West Coast a little more laid back and more common man.
Certainly in those days, certainly it was even more pronounced, I think, than now. I mean, as I say, these kids from Washington were kids that grew up on dairy farms and logging camps and fishing towns around Washington State, and They'd grown strong, wielding axes and pitchforks, and they had to row against kids from the East Coast, kids who were the sons of bankers and lawyers and U.S. senators, and who had, in many cases, learned to row in prep schools. And there was also, I have to say, when you read the press accounts from the 30s, there was a certain kind of attitude in the press about the assumption that East Coast rowing would prevail over West Coast rowing, although by the mid-30s that was under severe challenge, not just from Washington, but also from Cal Berkeley had a very fine crew that was making inroads in the East Coast rowing establishment, too.
Well, the book centers around Joe Rantz, but it also talks about the other boys in the boat, and I was struck about the struggles they had. This was right after the Depression, and this was a hard time, especially out in the West Coast and in the Washington State area.
Yeah, it was a particularly tough time for some of them. I mean, Joe Rantz, who's at the center of the book in many ways, I won't give away too much by saying that Joe was basically abandoned by his family as a teenager and wound up having to literally forage in the woods for berries and poach salmon from the Dungeness River in order to survive. And so he had this very hard scrabble kind of existence as a young man. And in many ways, that kind of experience was reflective of what many Americans were going through. And I think that's part of the appeal of the story, is that these nine young men were in many ways typical of what ordinary Americans went through during those very, very challenging years.
And the 1936 Berlin Olympics, of course, were a big propaganda stage for Hitler and the Nazis. And what surprised you most in your research about those particular Olympics?
Yeah, well, you know, I had always known that the 36 Berlin Olympics were used as a propaganda tool. But I, to tell you the truth, I had no idea the extent to which the particularly Goebbels and his Ministry of Propaganda manipulated the press and staged those Olympics. I was stunned by the cynicism of it. You know, they literally, in the weeks leading up to the Olympics in Berlin, they rounded up all of the gypsies and homeless people and anybody who might be considered vagrant or objectionable and took them off to camps off the streets of Berlin. They whitewashed buildings and put fake flower pots out in front of them to make them look occupied, even though they weren't occupied. They sort of set Berlin up almost like a movie set so that it would look as clean and prosperous and civilized as possible. And the extent of that was really surprising to me, the lengths to which they went.
The book is now out in paperback. As a hardback, it became a New York Times bestseller. What has surprised you most, or do you find most fulfilling and reaction to the book since it came out?
I think for one thing, just on a personal level, is that the in terms of satisfaction, is that the family members of the nine people in the boat, the nine boys in the boat, they have been sitting on this story for 75 years, hoping it would be told. And now that it has been told, everybody I've been in contact with, all those families, are just overjoyed by it. So I share in that joy. That makes me particularly happy, just on a personal level. And then I've also just, of course, been very pleased that the story originally was picked up and appealed to people who are rowers themselves or have some background in rowing. But in the year since the book was published, it's gone far beyond that, as people have seen that it's really a story about much more than rowing. It's really about that generation of Americans. And so I've been gratified that it has spread out to a more general readership. And also that both men and women seem to enjoy it a lot. I get probably equal numbers of emails from male readers and female readers who are enthusiastic about it, and that also gratifies me.
Well, I appreciate all the rowing tips that you gave me and the great story that you tell, and thanks for your time today, too.
Thank you very much.
Daniel James Brown is the author of The Boys in the Boat, Nine Americans and Their Epic Quest for Gold at the 1936 Berlin Olympics. It's available where books are sold and is out in paperback now. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Mark Purcell.